And what's up, guys? Welcome to the podcast. And today we're going to be reviewing or rereading one of our original blog posts and sort of discussing it. And so I'm David.
This is Yoshi.
This is Anthony.
And today we're going to be rereading our article on imposter syndrome written by yours truly. And so no matter where you go to read martial arts related topics, whether it be on forums, books, or other blogs and vlogs about martial arts, you are sure to see one common thing: the importance of keeping your ego in check. In many instances, this is brought up as avoiding arrogance, staying humble, and being open. In a nutshell, this ego problem of putting yourself and your needs as the only things that matters is known as narcissism. Many martial artists, yourself included, may wonder or question, am I a narcissist? Well, I have good news for you. The mere fact that you are asking yourself that question, I can say with a high level of certainty that you are not a narcissist, but that doesn't mean you don't have an ego problem. By asking yourself this question, you reveal that you do in fact care what other people think about you, and it may be possible that you care too much. This opposite side of the spectrum ego problem, simply known as neediness, is emphasized to a lesser degree, but still causes a vicious cycle of insecurity and resentment. This vicious cycle can easily ruin your career as a martial artist or even your work during the day. Imposter syndrome, the disease that plagues the competent people, most competent people regardless of line of work, is where people who are generally competent in what they do doubt themselves, question if they are good enough, and are worried about being exposed as a fraud, even though they are not. This is something that I have experienced myself, and I can attest that it was very toxic. I was feeding myself poison. Luckily, there are certain things that you can do to help cure imposter syndrome and improve your outlook. Number one, understand your scope. This is different depending on who you are, what you do, and what you want. You need to ask yourself, what matters to me? When I was younger, I was incredibly troubled by the idea of being exposed as an illegitimate martial artist. I would ask myself, is what I do real? Am I qualified to have the rank that I do have? Certainly, modern age social media didn't help. It is so easy to hide behind a computer screen and comment on things without making yourself vulnerable. What helped me get over this is by understanding the scope of what I do. As a practitioner of Tung Sudo, often described as Korean karate, my job is not to get in the octagon and defeat a mixed martial arts fighter. My job is to perfect my forms, self-defense techniques, and light contact sparring. All of these, I can say I am at the very least okay and competent at. My job is to just be competent at karate, nothing more. I recommend that you go and analyze how you are judging yourself and what metrics you are using. What is your scope? Are you okay with what that scope is? If you are not happy with what your scope is, then it is up for you to change that scope by making a change in the art you train or how you train. On the other hand, if you are okay with your scope, chances are you aren't being fair to yourself. Number two, work on yourself, insert word here. The title is not a typo. Many times we need to work on our self-confidence, our self-esteem, or our self-compassion. For many of us, we are good at one or two of the above-mentioned attributes, but we may need to pay special attention to one of these areas. Which of these areas depends on you? I highly recommend that you read The Charisma Myth by Olivia Fox Cabane if you have not already. She defines the above as the following. Self-confidence is our ability, our belief, and our ability to do or learn how to do something. Self-esteem is how much we approve of our value ourselves, approve of or value ourselves. It's often a comparison-based evaluation, whether measured against other people or against our own internal standard for approval. Self-compassion is how much warmth we can have for ourselves, especially when we're going through a difficult experience. That is on page 84. It may be different for each person, but I think a lot of martial artists struggle with the latter, self-compassion. In an activity that is highly individualistic, we must remember to be kind to ourselves, understand that we are entitled to a bad day or even a bad week here and there. The whole point Fox is trying to tell us is that these are the three high-level areas we need to be the best versions of ourselves. And in order for us to realize that, we need to have fair and unbiased judgments of ourselves. Now you can look at everything I just said and say, wait, David, is this only applicable to martial arts? The answer is a big resounding no. After all, martial arts is about self-improvement, and that self-improvement does not end when you leave your mental training space. So in closing, do you have an ego problem? Are you fair to yourself? What do you want out of your martial arts? And really, what do you want out of life? And I cite The Charisma Myth by Olivia Fox Cabane.
And I really like something you said towards the end there, where you mentioned that we need to have fair and unbiased judgment of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where a lot of imposter syndrome comes from, mm-hmm. where we are judging ourselves based on other people around us and not looking at the abilities we have already gained, and look how the abilities that we have do match the criteria for the things that we need done.
Sure. Sure, absolutely. Like,
you know, in today's time, it's so quick, especially for martial artists, right, to go on YouTube, look at, you know, something on some social media site and see what other black belts are doing and seeing what other, you know, martial arts are doing and look at their training and then think to ourselves that, oh my gosh, right, I'm not good enough. I'm not, you know, a real black belt, or I'm not deserving of this rank that I hold, or I shouldn't be doing this art, right? Without trying to analyze ourselves and trying to understand that I'm not that person who's purposely training to try to get views on YouTube, right? Mm-hmm. Who's purposely training to try to catch your attention, or whose job it is to do that. You know, for a lot of, you know, martial artists, like the audience that we try to hit with, you know, urban martial artists, is the people who, you know, office by day, dojo by night, you know, that's our slogan, right? Is that, you know, we have a different goal in mind for what we want to do. And I think if we don't remind ourselves of that goal and remind ourselves why we're doing what we're doing, it's very easy for us to feel illegitimate with our skills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you mentioned the comparison-based, you know, theory, how when we compare ourselves, it can cause, you know, a great amount of distress. And I was having lunch with someone this week, and a topic came up where when we're making a comparison, it's very much important that we compare where we're at today with where we would be without our martial arts, and not necessarily compare ourselves to other people, or to compare our martial arts to different martial arts, or, you know, different people in a competition sense. So really what also helps, right, is if we compare and see where we're at and where we were, and to see what gains we've made and how much those gains have been really worth it.
Yeah, for sure. Like the one thing that you mentioned that I can relate to, that to kind of remind myself, like my starting point is something that is different than other people's starting points.
Mm-hmm.
And if I start, you know, in this particular place and someone else started here, and we might hold the same rank, but it doesn't mean that what I'm doing should look exactly like that person, right? That person may have started with better flexibility than me, or better strength than me, or they may mm-hmm. have started with a different type of instructor or type of instruction than I have, right? So it doesn't invalidate the skills that I have gained in my journey because I started a different location than they did.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I have a question for you, David.
Sure.
Did the topic of an article come first and then the book you read, the book came along, or do you read the book and then the topic came to you?
You know, I believe that I was reading through this book, and imposter syndrome itself isn't mentioned in the book, but reading this chapter sort of gave me the idea to then go through and then write this article. That article, or that chapter had a lot of good things that basically, to me, were attributes that would help you or help anybody avoid, you know, the difficulties of imposter syndrome. So that was when I was preparing to write my big paper for Fourth Don, when I was reading a lot of similar books like that, where I took a lot of that information and then put it into some of these articles to help me get going writing my paper.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And so, David, you mentioned that you was doing this for your Fort Dunn. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of talk more about your, you know, Fort Dunn, your process of going there? And did you experience any kind of imposter syndrome, you know, on that journey to Fort Dunn?
Oh, I know I did. I can tell
oh,
you how much.
Absolutely. A lot of imposter syndrome. So in the organization, the World Tongue Tsoto Association that Yoshi and I have, you know, attained our fourth dons in, it's a very arduous process to go from third don to fourth don. And you definitely feel a lot of imposter syndrome going along the way. So part of that requirement is to write a 20,000 word thesis. Now, Yoshi had to write a thesis for his undergrad degree, but I myself did not. So writing something of that length was a daunting process. And, you know, to think, well, I'm a third don, what can I write that these people would accept? But, you know, they put you up with a thesis mentor and they help you to write through the process and you get good feedback through that. But you do feel a lot of imposter syndrome because you look up to what a fourth don and what a master is, and you get this invite. And when you get this invite, Yoshi, I don't know if you felt like this, but you felt, wow, yeah, this is such an honor, but I still don't feel like I deserve it. You know, and there's a lot of imposter syndrome that comes out through there.
However, this invite for, you know, the people who might be listening that's not sure.
So you get invited to attend this master's clinic, which happens once a year, and it's open to fourth don and above, and those third dons that are getting ready to advance to fourth don. And so as a third don, you're invited, but you're not part of the club and you're the lowest ranking person in the room. But yet everybody there welcomes you greatly and makes you feel welcome, even though you're not part of the club yet, makes you feel like you can do it. Yoshi, I don't know if you have any extra comments on what goes on.
No, I think sticking with the topic of imposter syndrome here, I think what helps alleviate that once you actually get to the master's clinic is that, like David was saying, that they welcome you. And so it's that sense of community that you're belonging now, right? Up to this point, as a third don, you're like, there are some requirements that are written in the book, you know, no manual, whatever, but there are other requirements that go on behind the scenes that you're not aware of, or you don't have the information to you, not it's not visible to you. So you're still in this you're still not sure what's going to happen. Either you're going to get invited, you don't, it's part of the whole traditional aspect of Tong Sido, where you're not directly told that, yeah, you're in, you're out. You just got to wait for an email invite, and if you're not invited, you don't get anything, right? They don't even tell you, yeah, you're not invited, right? So you're definitely anxious waiting for something, and when that time frame goes by and you don't get anything, it's like, all right, you'll just have to wait till next year, right? But so once you get that invite, and then you go it's down in Alabama, you go there, and it's you get welcome from everyone, and we're talking about ego earlier, there's almost zero ego from anyone, from fourth dons to even the grandmaster there, that they all just welcome you. And it's incredible. And I think that helps alleviate that imposter syndrome for those candidates when they get there. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously they're still under the gun. They're still like being evaluated at where they're there, but that some of that pressure is off when you get there.
Right. And again, it just comes to understanding what your scope is. Your scope when you're there as a candidate is not to be the best candidate. That's not what you're expected to do. Your scope is to go through and keep each other, you know, emotionally ready, and keep everybody upbeat as you're trying to go through the process. Testing there is a team effort, right? You go through the tests, you hold each other accountable, you cheer people on, and that's your goal. Your goal is not to be the best person taking a test. It's not a competition there. It's very much so a group effort to go through that test and to pass. So when you get that out of your head that you need to be the best candidate, when you get that out of your head, right, you realize that you can do it and you can be there and you're going to help everyone else do it too. And that's one thing that they really, you know, drove through, and or at least not directly, but one thing that I got from it is that a healthy ego, right? We're talking about ego in this imposter syndrome article. A very, very healthy ego, right? It is never a crime for you to say to yourself, I can do it. Where it crosses into, you know, that gray territory of where it can become a bad egotistical point is when you say, I can do it better than you. But no one, you know, there has that mindset, right? They prepare you well to show up and have the proper ego and to go through the entire weekend. Then you realize that you can make it.
You know, you guys said two things that in your stories about your test that I think people can take and look at when they are dealing with imposter syndrome and they're not doing, you know, Tang Sudo, might not be part of the World Tang Sudo Association, might not get invited to these master clinics and things like that. But there's two things that I think that we can still take from this. And one is the evaluation. You know, Yoshi mentioned, you know, there is a group of people that evaluate you. Right? And then they say, hey, I think this person is qualified. And I think a lot of times we kind of miss that. Like, you know, you get your black belt or you get some other belt and then you start to doubt, you know, do I deserve this? Am I real? Did I get through this by luck? But when you start to doubt things like that, you also are doubting the people who gave you the seat at that table.
Yes.
Who said you were good enough. Right? Yes. You're doubting the skills of the people that evaluated you. Right. And I think a lot of times you have to kind of look at that too. Like, I'm a black belt, not because I got lucky, I got through, but because I sat around these other people who evaluated me and said, hey, look at this. This person is good enough. They saw my skills. And one thing about martial arts, it's kind of hard to fake it until you make it. Mm-hmm. Right? It's like one of the few things where you can't fake it until you make it.
Right.
Because once you get into the sparring ring, or once you break a board, or once you break concrete, or once you do that form, you know, they're going to tell. If you're faking it, and mm-hmm. the concrete and board would definitely tell if you're faking it. And right. a ring is straight up a snitch. if you're not good enough, you're gonna know you're not good enough, right?
Yeah.
And the people who evaluated you would know you're not good enough. But if these mm-hmm. people evaluated you, and they say this person is good enough for this rank that they hold, and they have the skills, I think that's something that, you know, when we're going through imposter syndrome, that we should keep in the back of our head. And the next one is scope, right? I'm kind of going back to us comparing ourselves with other people, right? I think we have to remember the scope of other people. Like, yes, these UFC fighters are martial artists, but I'm training to be a UFC fighter. Is that my scope? And you mentioned, like, you know, it's important to know what it is you're trying to do. And we need to make sure that we're giving ourselves fair, you know, judgment, as we said earlier, so that we don't lock ourselves into a mentality of constantly thinking I'm not good enough when we're comparing ourselves to people that's not even doing the same thing we were trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those are like kind of two things that I was getting when I was listening to you guys just mm-hmm. now.
You know, my one takeaway, Anthony, on the first thing, it takes a great deal of humility to accept, you know, the results of a test, even if, right, you pass the test. It takes a great deal amount of humility to accept that you did pass, because those that went before you said so. And that's a very important thing to keep in mind. And that goes back to, you know, one of my favorite quotes, and Yoshi will roll his eyes because he's heard it many times. And it's from C.S. Lewis. Humility is not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less, putting others first and stuff like that. But humility is not putting yourself down, Because if you put yourself down, what does that say to the person that gave you your position, that gave you your rank and everything like that? You know, I can think of one trip that Yoshi and I took to Omaha, Nebraska to visit, you know, our good friends there. And in the school, there is a framed portion of the wall that is typically signed by, you know, important visitors. And while we were there, we were asked to sign the wall. And at first I was like, I'm not that important. Why should I be signing this wall? But then I realized that when I was there, I was signing the wall, not for myself, but I was signing the wall for all the students there. And how disappointed would the students be if I did not sign that wall? And that's one thing that I will always remember, right? It's about doing it for them, right? It's important to do things for you, but when you realize it's not about you, it's important to keep that in mind.
Right. Just for the record, for people listening, I did not roll my eyes. I like that quote. Oh,
I like that quote.
Just want to keep that record straight.
I use it a lot. Yeah.
Going back to comparing ourselves to others, you know, I struggle with especially the process leading up to getting promoted this past April, because my instructor, I started training in Michigan, you know, and my instructor. I'm the same rank as my instructor now, right? I have outranked his student that is many, many years my senior at this point, right? So I struggled being like, no, I'm ranking these people that I really looked up to who helped me on my martial art journey when I was just starting out in college, you know? So I struggled just not the fact that I'm now better than them or anything. But I have this rank, prestigious rank now that I'm either equal to or higher than them, and I reached out to them and asked them, hey, you know, if you can able to come to my promotion ceremony, it would be an honor for me. And all they just gave me words of encouragement. They're just congratulating me, saying, oh, we had faith in you, you could do it, and that was such a relief to hear them say that, right? Mm-hmm. Even though like I'm. Now, at their level, they had no ego on their end to say, hey, you deserve this. You know, so that it meant a lot to me to hear them say that. So, mm-hmm. again, alleviate, again, that sense of community, go back to that sense of community again, that I'm sure, and again, David and I, we've only been part of this Roll Tongue Sudo Association our entire martial arts career, right? That's so we're right. We don't have visibility to the other organizations. I'm sure they got their own sense of community and all that, but I find out that it's still an incredibly rare thing to encounter that kind of community.
Mm-hmm. Anthony, do you have anything to share being the one, I guess, outsider?
Oh, yeah. I was like, as he was talking, I was thinking of things, right? So like for me, I do a lot of different martial arts in different, you know, organizations. I did both ITF style Taekwondo, not part of like one of the international Taekwondo federations, but the organization I'm with was, you know, based on that, the Taekwondo United Alliance of America. Studied with the World Taekwondo Federation for a little bit, one of their schools. I did one of the forms of Japanese Jiu-Jitsu. I did Kung Fu, you know, Tung Sudo. And for me, the community part is there on nearly like everywhere, people encouraging you and wanting you to get better and trying to help you out. And, you know, for me, one of the things that if, you know, people ask me, you know, what I'm trying to do with martial arts and stuff, you know, I'm trying to like learn, you know, like all different kind of aspects. And I'm trying to just try to integrate all different kind of aspects into my style, right? Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that I had to like keep in check was my scope, because I'd be seeing these people here who are like boss in jiu-jitsu, boss ground game on point, right? Can't touch these people. And I'm like, man, you know, and I'd be ranking, you know, going through the ranks. I'm like, man, do I belong here, man? I'm just getting whooped by these people. And I had to kind of remember what my scope is. My scope isn't to be the best ground fighter. My scope is to try to be one of the best well-rounded martial artists that I can be,
mm-hmm.
right? It means that I probably won't be the best in this one thing, but I'm good. I try to be good in a lot of different things. Right? I'd be good in both ground fighting, both standing, clinch fighting, throwing, grappling. And I might not be the best because that's not my scope. My scope is to just learn as much as I can. And I realized that because I'm doing that, I'm also getting a joy from teaching other people things that they might not necessarily know from their art, and like seeing a look on their face when I'm teaching them from something that I learned before is like super exciting to me. And now my scope is like, yeah, I want to be one of the best right around it, but I also want to be one of the best teachers where I can show different people different things, right? Like I've fought people who ground game is really good, but then we'll stand up and they'd be like, man, how did you kick that high towards my face? And I'm like, well, because I've been doing taekwondo and tang soo do. Or I spar someone doing taekwondo or tang soo do, and then we'll go to the ground and I put them in an arm bar. And they're like, oh my gosh, how did you do that? I'm like, well, I've been doing jiu-jitsu. Right? And then I can teach them that, and just watching them, that joy that they get when they're learning something new, right? Help kind of change my scope and help with the imposter syndrome, right? Because the jiu-jitsu people recognize me at that rank, and I felt as though I'm not part of that rank, but also I wasn't doing what they was doing. That wasn't the only style that I'm learning. That and their starting points was also different from mine, where their starting point was like jiu-jitsu, right? While my starting point is taekwondo. So, there's things that I was used to that was putting itself in that art that I had to try to unlearn while doing that art, while at the same time I'm also doing these other arts that I enjoy. So, good.
And then, that reminds me, in my article, I mentioned the word metric. So metric as in like, how do you evaluate whether your goal is successful or not successful? So like what you're saying, Anthony, when your metric is to learn and to be well-rounded, then you will feel like you are accomplishing your goal. But if your metric that you're evaluating yourself on, like you're saying, right, is to, dominate everyone in every style, then you're going to be disappointed. But I think you have yourself, knowing you for as long as I've known you, have the correct metric in your mind for establishing what makes your training successful versus unsuccessful. And you really, you're a hallmark of trying to learn and having that be your goal.
Yeah, and thank you for like saying that, because that means that the goal that I wanted, that other people are also seeing that goal, and that means that I'm kind of going in the right direction. Not saying that I still don't get imposter syndrome when I go to the Tang Sudo class and David is holding his leg up in the air for like 1 minute straight, foot extended, and I'm like, oh man, this is this nonsense. I've been doing taekwondo my whole life, and I'm over here struggling waist level, but like my scope is different than your scope, right? And then when I put myself in reminder of that imposter syndrome, it alleviates, as Yoshi said, and we only have like a minute left. So is there like any last minute? Literally any last minute thing anyone wants to say.
It was talking about going back to teaching and sharing people your experience. That's another thing that imposter syndrome can really creep up in, is like, especially when we have our training clinics and people always asking, can people volunteer to teach a subject? And I'm like, I don't have anything that's interesting that anyone wants to listen to. And this is something I've always told myself, like, no, there's always something you can always teach someone that someone's never seen before, right? So don't be afraid to share, even though yeah, we have so many forms, right? But there's always an angle or a perspective you can always bring to the table that no one's ever really thought about before. So I definitely encourage you, for those who are, again, struggling with their own posture, and like, oh, I have nothing important to share or nothing cool to teach. Well, no, you do have something to teach. It's your perspective. It's not necessarily just the actual moves themselves, but how you do your moves. That's the unique part of it.
And
I really like that, because I know that's something that took me a while to kind of get to. It's like, hey, I have something to offer. I can teach people, even though they're these super awesome people in this art, right? I still have something that I can offer them. Thank you guys so much for listening to us. Hope you decide to listen to us again when we release more podcasts. Hope you guys have a good evening, a good day, or a good afternoon, whatever time you're listening to this.
Thank you guys. Dun da 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 da.
We're gonna edit that out, right?
Yeah,
how do I see Anthony like dying inside?